After Dark with Rob and Andrew on America Out Loud, which is available on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or Pandora, or head on over to the website AmericaOutLoud.com and check out the articles and podcasts, and please share those on social media. We have a big show tonight. We'll be joined once again by Dr. Dev. We're looking forward to hearing from her. And we're going to be talking about something that I'm sure a lot of people throughout the country deal with on a daily basis, especially those who live in big cities, and that is mentally ill people walking the streets. You know, recently I was on a trip. I went all the way to Oregon and I bussed back. And when I was in Denver, Colorado, I was approached by someone mentally ill and they just started screaming profanity in my face. And when that happens, you're forced with two options. You can either respond or try and ignore it and get out of the situation, which is exactly what I did. But that's a really hard situation for a lot of Americans to deal with. And I think it's becoming more and more prevalent that people have to unfortunately deal with this, especially in a lot of these bigger cities where mental illness in the streets is running rampant. I'm looking forward to the discussion tonight. But first off, Rob, how are you doing?
Andrew, I'm doing good, and I want to thank all of our listeners for tuning in to our show tonight, because this show is really important, and I hope that our listeners will share it on their social media and with their friends and family, because we have on with us Dr. Dev, and she's going to be talking to us about an incident that she encountered in New York City on a subway. We're also going to talk about crime as a whole, and as Andrew mentioned, the mental ill. He said that he had gone on a trip and a mentally ill person had accosted him and he just walked away. And Andrew and I, we've spoken about this before. He lives in Illinois and I'm in New York City. So I'm kind of almost like in the thick of things. And when I moved to the city some 20 years ago, the city was in the middle of its transformation. And it finally transformed into what most people were saying was like Disneyland, Mickey Mouse. You could walk the streets late at night without fear of being harmed. You could go to Times Square, which is like a tourist attraction, and nothing would happen to you. Riding the subway, oh my gosh, I can't tell you the times I've ridden the subway late at night by myself, and I probably even dozed off, which isn't a good thing anywhere. But there was no fear that someone would cause me bodily harm. Some 20 years later, it's a completely different story. And this happened, it seems, within the blink of an eye. We voted for a mayor whom, in my humble opinion, and yes, it's my opinion, which I think to be true when I'm looking around me and seeing the crime that's taking place, Bill de Blasio, who should have never been let near the city hall or the mayoralship. They didn't vote for him once, but twice. And like, I'm scratching my head. I'm like, what's going on here? When he came in, we knew the kind of person that he was. He came in, started changing things little by little. And then when COVID came, just stopped the papers. That was his opportunity to change New York City forever. Along with a few comrades, people that were also elected into office that had his same mindset on crime and letting crime run rampant, turning Times Square back into a denizen of crime and filth and dirty and ugly things, walking around on the city the same way. Oftentimes I'm walking my son to school. I live in the financial district and we're having to hopscotch over human excrement as well as dog excrement. Before de Blasio, we didn't have that. You have homeless people living on the streets. The other day I saw on Facebook a woman who has decided to claim a corner of one of the streets as her home, her turf. And someone took a picture of her as well as a video of her snorting cocaine. Like it was no one's business, broad daylight. And I responded, I'm like, this has got to stop. And someone said, well, the police said that they had arrested her. They took her in, gave her a psych exam, and that she was fine. And she has every right to be on the streets. I'm like, wait a minute. What do you mean by every right to be on the street? She's not paying taxes. She does not own that part of the street. If I were to go out there right now, they would probably arrest me and say, sir, move on. But for some reason, she's a homeless person and she's allowed to do it. She isn't the only one. There are a lot of others. Because under Bill de Blasio, he felt that they should be there. Why shouldn't they? You guys think that you live in Fidai, the hoity-toity area? I don't think so. We're going to bring these people and put them in your neighborhood. We don't care if your neighborhood was safe. They deserve to be there. We don't care if it brings down the real estate. We don't care if businesses decide to leave. We're going to put them there. There was a high-end hotel not too far from me. They decided to turn that into a dormitory for homeless men, men who have records, sex offenders. And on any given night, you will see them huddled about on the streets like they're sitting on their stoop, smoking and drinking and carrying on. We're now daylight savings time. I hate to think of what's going to happen. The subway. Any given day, you can walk on the subway and there's a homeless person who's decided to make the subway their home, their bedroom. They're sleeping on the subway trains with filth, excrement on the subway trains. And then they will accost people, swear at them, and say all manner of things. Now, Andrew said that it happened to him. He walked away. I would like to think that I would walk away. But a lot of times these are knee-jerk reactions. Someone comes to you, they approach you, and you're like, wait a minute, back off, brother. What the heck do you think you're doing? That could be to my detriment. I could lose my life. The people that have lost their lives on the subway that have been attacked. A woman was attacked with human excrement. A man smeared it all over on her. She was minding her own business. They arrested him, and by noon he was out, and he went back to the scene of the crime, saw a camera, and started taunting what he had done, saying, oh, look at what I did. Another man was attacked with a hammer. Another individual pushed on the subway tracks. And this is happening. All of this has happened in 2022. This is thanks to the liberal policies of the left. And someone would say, oh, well, conservatives would do the same thing. Well, if they would, they're rhinos, Republicans in name only. We have laws on the books for a reason. D.A. Bragg, who's decided to say, oh, we're only going to prosecute certain crimes. And as I have said before, and it's most unfortunate that a lot of the individuals that are committing most of these crimes that we're seeing, I hate to say it, but they're Black like me. And what does that mean? If I walk out, a law-abiding citizen, minding my own business, someone could point me out and say, he looks like that man. Now, some would say, oh, that's racism. Oh, that's profiling. Well, what we're seeing on TV, they're Black men that are doing this, or else it's a Black deranged woman. Yes, there are white people that are doing it, and there are other individuals, Asians, but a majority of them that we have seen have been Black. And I hate to say it, but we have to speak truth to power, and we have to address this issue. Because while D.A. Bragg is thinking that he's helping, he's actually doing more harm. Because what will happen is that all Black men will start being fearful that they might point to me and say that I did it. And the next thing will happen, they'll say, racism, profiling. But all we have to do is to look at the laws that were on the book, the laws that decided to say, we're not going to prosecute certain crimes. We're going to let that go. And when you let it go, when you just decide to look the other way, innocent people are harmed, and it has to stop. It has to stop now. We have to stop voting for these individuals. It is time to turn the corner and realize that this experiment that de Blasio left us with is destroying the city. It's destroying lives. It's killing people. We had on our show Madeline Brom, who talked about the same thing, that she lost her life, who was a veteran, lost his life to crime. We have to turn the corner. We're bringing on Dr. Dev to tell you her experience, what she experienced. And folks, it's not good. Dr. Debbie, how are you? Thank you for coming on tonight.
Oh, thanks for having me, Rob. It's great to join you.
So my opening. What are your thoughts? Am I exaggerating? Because I mean, I could be exaggerating here. Who knows? But you've experienced this, and that's why we wanted you to come on and share your story. So am I exaggerating this? Is this happening? Has New York been turned around?
Not at all. I would go one step further and say that our laws themselves are somewhat unfair, you know, that I didn't realize how bad our laws were. I mean, I had run for office, so I knew some of them, but it was actually after I had this experience when I was filing my police report that I even got into the nitty gritty of our laws and realized just how difficult the situation is to even try to pursue something when someone has been attacked. Now, I was more, you know, sort of verbally sort of approached by somebody, but I witnessed someone physically being assaulted on the subway. So I'll just say briefly. So I was on the subway. None of this is really very new. Like throughout the pandemic, working during COVID, I was riding the subways. I actually think things have stayed about the same throughout this time. I just don't think people were reporting it. Like the frontline workers, I don't think they were going forward as much reporting crime. But anyway, in this past couple of weeks, so I saw a person. I kind of already knew something was going on. This person was blaring their radio, acting a little agitated, and kind of like Andrea, kind of had a feeling that something was happening, but you get desensitized to these things in some ways. But I just had a feeling about this particular individual because things were escalating pretty quickly. So I actually started filming it with my camera, which people could say, well, why were you doing that? But I just had a feeling, and I'm not trained in de-escalating people, even though I'm a physician. I do more pain procedures in the spine, like minimally invasive spine procedures. Anyway, within moments, this person grabbed this woman by the face, slammed her head into the wall, which I didn't see, actually. I just later noticed it on my cell phone because I was trying not to make eye contact with this person. But he was pacing back and forth up and down the subway car, screaming at people, kind of punching the car walls. In between people, I thought, but he was actually hitting people as well. Grabbed the emergency brake, which I didn't even know we had one on the car, but stopped the subway car, every door locked. And we were trapped on this subway car with this person while he paced back and forth, cursing at everyone and everything. Actually, he noticed me filming him, even though I thought I was being subtle, but he came up to me, and I'll come back to this, but he specifically told me, you know, you're not scared, you're stupid, kind of cursed me out and kind of kept moving towards other people. But he was hitting people on this. Then at some point, you know, we kept hearing these notices from the MTA, the conductor, I guess, saying there was something wrong with the subway. They're going to check it out, which of course we knew it was our car. And then someone, we were close enough to the platform, someone came, unlocked a door, came in and then left. And then we were still trapped with this person. And so then ultimately, eventually this person, I guess, got bored and left, you know, by unlocking that half door that was somewhat open or unlocking it. Or I really couldn't quite tell completely what was going on, either unlocking or it's partially open already and just pushed it open the rest of the way. But he left. So, you know, I tried to give them my footage there because I thought, well, whatever it is, you know, I thought that that was assault, even if you didn't actually hit someone. I thought it was battery if you actually hit someone. But if I had known people had been physically hurt, I would have offered to help them just as a physician. But I thought he had just hit the walls. Anyway, no one wanted my footage. So, you know, I texted the people I was supposed to meet who are healthcare workers. I was meeting them. They said they saw police at the subway station itself. So I thought, oh, okay, they must have apprehended this person or whatever. And then I left the station. Well, a few blocks later, of course, I see this individual walking on the street. Now, this is a nice area, suburban area, so there weren't too many people on the street. And I thought, oh, like he's just there. Well, I was on the other side of the street. I thought, I'll just keep walking. You know, I have to get to this destination now. I'm late after all this. Oh, my goodness. The person saw me across the street, came charging across the street, you know, screaming at me about how it was tailing him and all kinds of stuff. And then this was actually even more alarming than the subway, if you can imagine, because I actually thought he was going to attack me this time, like physically attack me. So I backed out of the way and kept backing out of the way and ducking from him. Which luckily I'm fast and have my health and like have worked in the emergency room and some other settings where people can be, you know, somewhat furious, no joke. But he was trying to push me into the traffic. I felt like there was a lot of pressure for me to back up into that other part of the cross section. And he actually at one point started screaming at me repeatedly to like jump into the oncoming traffic. So I wasn't going to do that. And I kept telling him no and trying to talk to him as though he was a disturbed patient, even though, like I said, I'm not formally trained, but I am a physician. So this just kept going on. And then finally, it was enough of a scene. Like people were looking at us. I screamed at somebody to call 911. Seemed like no one did. They just kept looking. And then, you know, it was sort of like a standoff. And finally, this guy started screaming at the traffic because I said, I'm not going to jump in front of the traffic. And we were getting closer and closer. And then finally, some cars, and I think it was a truck or an SUV, somebody stopped. And I was able to pass in front of that person to be able to get to the other side. And then when I got out there, this person kind of waited. And this lady on the other side, I said, why didn't you call 911? She's like, well, you're fighting with your boyfriend. I thought, what? Like, I don't know this person, you know, but anyway, to make a long story short, this person continued to follow me till I got to my destination, where I texted people to come out right away, texted and called, come out right away, let me in right away, but don't stand out there. Just come out quickly and let me in. But when I talked to the police later, a couple of things that struck me, not that they said it, but it just struck me after, because you're like processing these things, you know, it's sort of like, even though I felt like I was being forced into the oncoming traffic in many, many ways, I asked them to look at the traffic cam footage, which, you know, I don't know if they will or won't. Apparently, that's kind of not an automatic type of thing. This has to do more with your own fear and your own perception, because unless they physically grab you and throw you into the oncoming traffic, it's not considered the same thing, which I get it. But at the same time, fear for your own safety could be the same thing as someone licking their lips at you. So to me, I just don't think that's the same thing. At least to this person is at least double my weight, maybe more, much taller than me. I just saw him attack these people on the subway and we were trapped on the subway together. I feel like these cannot be considered the same. And, you know, just several things about the whole experience. The police, I thought the person handled it very well and was very kind to me, but what can they do with these types of laws that we have on the books, you know?
So it felt as if though he was trying to get you to run into the traffic, this individual, this deranged person.
Yeah, exactly. He wanted me to run into the traffic and be hit by the traffic because this is a busy intersection. So it's not as though it's not something like where, you know, you're kind of calmly walking through a dead end or something like that. No, it's like a busy intersection where if you try to walk into oncoming traffic, you'll be roadkill.
This doesn't make any sense at all. And the police, were they hesitant to want to look at the footage, or did it seem as if though they didn't believe you, or their hands were tied? They were just like, okay, what can we do, ma'am?
You know, I don't want to speak for them, but I didn't get the perception that they didn't believe me. I thought they believed me. It sounded more like their hands might be tied in some way or other, because I had already said the guy did not grab me. So they seemed to be kind of pushing on that point more. Like, did he actually physically put his hands on me? So I said no, because I ducked him several times. Like, it wasn't once, it was that I was faster than him. That was basically it. But that seems like it puts a lot of pressure on the person who is being chased.
It doesn't
around
make it right. If someone is telling you that this is what happened, I would think, and I'm not a police officer, but I would like to think this is what I would do. I say, okay, ma'am, who is a person? Point the person out to us. Then I would go talk to the person or say, this is a description. Be on the lookout for this person just in case it happens again. Now, what if this guy had gone and had attacked someone? They had an opportunity to go and question the guy. This was a missed opportunity. But as I said in my opening, to do so, you would have the public saying, oh, you're profiling. You're profiling this guy because she said it looked like this. So you're going to profile. But under Giuliani, there was a lot of profiling that went on, but crime went down. And well, if we're going to allow these individuals to walk the streets, go into the subway, and do whatever the heck they want to do, of course crime is going to go up. Of course people are going to be harmed. And it's not fair. It's not right. You were about to say, Dr. Deb?
Oh, well, I was going to say, we don't even need profiling in this case, because I actually shot a video of this guy. So we have, you know, we have his actual appearance, we have his outfit, we have, you know, everything about him, like what he looked like that day. And like I said, in the video, which I couldn't see with my eyes at that time, because I was trying not to look directly at him, but at least to get some, you know, image of what he looked like. But he grabs a woman by her face and slams her head into the wall. So we actually have him. I mean, if they want to see him physically hit somebody, he did, you know, so we have that on video. So they said that was the one, although they can't do much about him chasing me after, or, you know, running across the street enraged, coming at me and all this type of stuff. You know, we have that. But even there, I'm not even sure what happened with that, because they weren't sure if the person that was hit had filed a complaint. So this is another thing where I wonder about our laws and the nitty gritty. So like I said, I'm not a police officer, I'm not in law enforcement or anything like that. And I don't know, you know, for confidentiality reasons, I don't know what happened with the rest of this, but it seems like they really need not just me showing them the video, that may not be enough, but they need to track down this person and they need to track down the victims too from that subway car in order to put this whole case together. Because if there's no complaining victims, that may be another problem, because I'm not a complaining victim, I'm a witness to the whole thing with my cell phone footage. So the whole thing seemed to me very difficult for the police to actually stop this individual.
Again, it shouldn't be that way. You have the footage. You have the footage. All they had to do was to take a look at it. But had they done so, you would have had some fancy young attorney who would have said, oh, well, no, you can't do that. That's not fair. And we can't. How do we know that she was just taping this? How do we know this guy? I mean, they would make up every excuse in the book. It seems as if, though, criminals have more rights than we law-abiding citizens. And as I said, going on the subway, I never had that much fear in my life. I don't know how long you've lived in the city, doctor, but I mean, when I walk out, I am always cognizant, not that you shouldn't be. And I'm a man and I live in Fidai, a really nice area, should be safe area. But now when I'm walking out, just walking to the store or to a restaurant, I'm like, let me be careful, because I don't know what will happen. And these individuals, they behave as if though they know who to attack and what they're doing. I know that they say, well, they're mentally ill. Oh, I can't, I wrestle with that, Andrew. I really do. Because some of the crimes that they commit, pushing people in front of a moving train. You know, if you're mentally ill, why would you think to push a person in front of a moving train? Why would you, as you said, Dr. Dad, they were on the subway, cussing people out and hitting people. Why would you do that? I would think that you would want to run away. And I'm not an expert in mental ill. I've taken classes, but I'm not a doctor, that you would want to be left alone. But why would you go and approach a person and try to hit them? And then if they were to hit you back, you just launch out and attack them.
Well, that I will say one thing. So although I'm not a psychiatrist or psychologist, I have worked with a lot of people with mental illness over the years. I mean, I worked at the VA for a long time, treating veterans with depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder. And this person, although he may have a diagnosis of mental illness, you know, I don't know his history or any of that, but I didn't see him looking like he was in the middle of an episode. So I actually thought he was making very logical decisions of someone who was just plain angry and enraged, rather than someone who is in the midst of some, you know, kind of episode. So meaning there were a couple people on this subway car who were, you know, bigger than him maybe, or at least as big as him. He did not go near them doing all of this stuff. He picked a woman who looked older than him and who looked terrified to go, you know, grab by the face. He picked another guy who was smaller than him. He actually didn't hit me for all this and me filming and everything else, you know. He, you know, so the people that he targeted are people who looked frail and scared. Then on top of that, you know, sometimes people that I've seen who are in the middle of having some kind of, you know, episode, let's just say, they look really, they don't make eye contact. They look like they're moving slowly sometimes, you know, moving slowly, sometimes moving more quickly. They sometimes are talking to people that aren't there. They're kind of looking at people that aren't there. They're doing some strange stuff. This person wasn't doing that. Actually, on top of that, he was well-shaved. He was well-dressed, you know, well-groomed, I should say, shaved, you know, all of that stuff looked, you know, pretty good, like someone who's relatively well put together compared to some others that look, you know, not so well. But this person looked like, you know, he found an opportunity, not in the midst of some mental health crisis, but just an opportunity to find people who were terrified and he could let his anger loose, you know, on these people who were trapped on a subway car because he trapped them by pulling the emergency brake, you know. So, I think there's a distinction to me. One, like sometimes, you know, people can have a mental health diagnosis, you know, but sometimes people are in the midst of some kind of crisis where there's like a medical illness, sometimes diabetics, low blood sugar, they also can have all kinds of problems. You know, sometimes people could be using, you know, alcohol, other drugs, all kinds of stuff and seem psychotic too. So there's a whole spectrum of all kinds of things that could cause people to not act normally. But this person seemed like he was making very logical decisions, just somebody who was, you know, needed anger management or something. And then here are the perfect people to take out his anger on.
Well, see, that's what I've always said. And as I said in my opening, so this gentleman looked clean cut and whatnot. No, just imagine had someone just gave a description of him and say he was clean cut. He was this high height. This is what he looked like, his weight. And then I walk out on the street, the police see me, and they say, okay, let's grab him. I'm clean cut. I don't look like I can hurt anyone. I'm harmless. But because of the laws that are on the books now, they could pull me in and say, hey, did you do X, Y, Z? And then immediately what would happen is that the left would say, oh, racial profiling. They profiled him because they said that he was clean cut and he looks like his skin was brown. So, oh yeah, they had to have been racial profiling. So now we have police that are hesitant to do anything out of fear that they will be attacked. And in my opinion, and as I said, I think my opinion is the gospel on these things, since I've been here for 20 years and to see what has happened to the city under de Blasio, it is the laws that they are pushing. It is the policies that they're trying to create, as they say, equity, but look at the other half, look at the individuals that you're harming who haven't done anything at all. So they're swept up in this as well, because you're not thinking. You're not thinking about it holistically. You're just, oh, we want equity. And we think that for too long, these people have been marginalized and they're not being treated fairly. Yeah, but what about those individuals who have been following the law? Now they're going to be caught up in this nonsense. Simply because the laws have been changed and you guys want equity. You're trying to, again, identity politics, woke, as opposed to looking at, wait a minute, there's a certain element in society that's bad. And from what you're describing with this gentleman, I don't think, and again, I'm not a doctor who would handle patients like that. He might've been having a bad day, but still people like that, they shouldn't be out on the streets. And if they are, they should be arrested. And if they're arrested, we shouldn't just let them out without saying, wait, what's happening here, buddy? You can't do that. But they're doing it because they know that I can get away with it. You're going to lock me up, just like I said, the pooper smearer. Smeared feces on the woman sitting on the subway platform, minding her own business. And he knew, they said that during his, when he went before the court, he was swearing at the judge and saying, this is taking too long, let me go. And lo and behold, he was out on the streets by noon.
Sure.
This has got to stop. And look at DC, an Uber driver, the young girls who tried to take his car from him and he died. They killed him. Juvenile detention. They'll be let out when they're 18. They'll do it again. There are no consequences to their actions. And then we look and say, oh, the crime. Oh, my God, it's just so high. We've got to stop the crime. And what are we going to do? Well, Andrew, in my opinion, one of the things is we've got to stop voting for these same people over and over again.
Right, because who we have in office now, instead of addressing the problem, they're just keep putting people back onto the streets to keep committing the same crimes. We see that happening over and over again. You're tuned into After Dark with Rob and Andrew, available on America Out Loud via iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or download the America Out Loud app to keep track of all the shows. We'll be back with more After Dark with Rob and Andrew with our special guest, Dr. Debbie.
In today's world, there's no escaping the headlines filled with warnings about emerging viruses and dangerous superbugs. Genesis is the only technology that safely and effectively obliterates harmful pathogens both on the air and on surfaces. Genesis plus HOCL neutralize these threats to your environment in just seconds. Find out more about this amazing technology at genesisfogger.com/outloud for a 15% discount. With Genesis, you'll be prepared for what's next.
Dr. Vladimir Zelenko knows a thing or two about the immune system. He was nominated for a Nobel Prize for his early COVID-19 treatments, and now he's offering his Z-Stack supplements to our listeners at a discount. Just go to zstacklife.com/freedom. That's zstacklife.com/freedom.
Because of COVID-19, many Americans worry about their health 4 times a day. That's 112 times per month. But by simply keeping our immune system strong, we can stay healthy and put our worries at ease. One little known way to do this is by taking AC11, a patented supplement from a plant in the Amazon rainforest. Studied for over 20 years and backed by over 40 scientific peer-reviewed studies, taking AC11 has been proven to extend the life of immune cells called leukocytes, allowing you to boost immunity naturally. Go to healthycell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of AC11. That's healthycell.com, HEALTHYCELL, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Our invincible American spirit drives the most audacious experiment in the history of self-government. America Out Loud celebrates the American spirit every minute of every day. AmericaOutloud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
And we're back to After Dark with Rob and Andrew. If you missed the first half of the show, I would definitely say when the podcast comes out, please go and listen to it and share it. It deals with crime and what people in New York City are encountering. And it's just not New York City. It's all over. Suddenly, there has been like an increase in crime, in the murder rate, burglary, all over the country. Now, we have the folks on the left. They want to say that it's because of COVID. And now that we're opening up and people are going back outside and the warmer months are coming, people are just acting out. No, it has nothing to do with that. It has to do with the folks that we're putting in office. It has to do with the politicians who have been elected and are refusing to uphold the law. It has to do with the politicians who are elected and are looking at equity. And we want to make certain that we're treating everyone fairly. Yeah, but what about the people that are being attacked, the victims? The left likes to talk about victims, but they don't like to talk about the victims of their crimes. What about those individuals? What about the individuals whose lives have been destroyed? Fathers have been killed, mothers killed, children killed. We're seeing a lot of that. Look at Chicago every weekend, but no one is talking about it. But the moment a cop, a white cop, happens to kill a black man, whoa, we're going to stop everything. And we're going to protest and go and burn down the cities. That's not the time to focus on it. The time is now. We've got to stop this crazy crime wave that's affecting the country. How do we do it? By electing politicians or individuals that are committed to upholding the law. And I'm tired of them trying to create a new law to protect the current law. In my humble opinion, murder is murder. You don't have to come and say, well, we want to hate crime for this murder. No, it's murder. You kill the person. Go to jail. Because when you start introducing all these subsets, it's very difficult to prove them when it goes to court. We have criminals that are running the streets that have more rights than we citizens that are obeying the law have. It shouldn't be that way. And as I said, the fear that I have living in New York City, one of the biggest cities in the country, that before the past, I think, 8 years, it was a safe city. Dr. Dev, how long have you lived in the city?
Well, most recently since 2010, but I was born in the city. So, you know, my parents lived here, like, you know, for a while before that. Then we moved to the suburbs when I was, you know, a few years old. And So I grew up in the suburbs and then went to school elsewhere. But I've been in the city for a long time. So I know what you're talking about. I never used to think about it at all growing up there, coming into the city on the weekends. And then in, you know, 2010 working here, I definitely never thought about safety really, which maybe, you know, that's kind of naive. But lately, it's not even so much that I'm worried for my own safety, but I have small children too. So I worry about where should they go. And they used to spend a lot of time in Times Square because they like to look at all the characters, Elmo and all of this stuff. They're small. Right. But that is not safe for them to be at. So then they used to spend time going, you know, to other areas. But then even the stabbing at MoMA, you know, just this weekend, that's another area. Oh, you can't go that direction. Go in the other direction towards Hudson River. Generally, we live in Manhattan. Generally, that's not ideal either because it starts to get a little sketchy as you move towards the water. Every direction you start to feel a little bit boxed in, you know, and depending on where you're going, start to wonder what's safe for children. Then even working with my patients, I work with a lot of people who are older and disabled. Throughout the pandemic, this was a struggle because although people were talking about COVID and stuff, and okay, they were worried about that just because of their age group and their medical conditions, they were really very worried about crime, which people weren't talking about as much. Because what they said is if they have canes, if they have walkers, if they have anything that identified them as potentially disabled, they were immediately targeted. So they tried to ditch these things so that they wouldn't look like they had any kind of medical problem because people would look for that in order to rob them or attack them. So to me, you know, all of it is a concern.
And it shouldn't be that way. People should be able to wonder about the city without having that fear concept. And like you said, Times Square, as I mentioned earlier on, that was like a haven. People would go there with their families. It was like a hot spot. You would go to Times Square, look at the characters, look at the tall buildings, people watch. But now it's like, if I go there, I might be ducking a bullet. And there's a certain segment of the population that's okay with that. They seem, oh yeah, we like this. We want to bring that back. And you mentioned that maybe we were, you know, being naive to think that, hey, this is New York City. I don't have to worry about anything. In 2010, that was the farthest thing from my mind that I could be shot. But now taking my son and his cousin to Times Square, I have reservations. Even if it's like during noon, I'm like, I don't know what could happen. And if something should happen, what would be the reaction of the police? What will they do? What will D.A. Bragg do? Will he prosecute or will he let them out? And if he lets them out, then I'm going to live in fear that this person might come and look for me.
Yes.
I mean, all of the attacks that have taken place in the city this year alone, it's astonishing.
Well,
go ahead.
Oh, I didn't mean to interrupt. I was going to say that was another thing when I filed this police report for the subway incident. That was another thing that came up because you know, if anyone's ever done this before, you have to provide all your contact information, everything, which I said. So this person, if they ever do find him, which, you know, who knows if they will. So he gets all my contact information as well, right? So then they said yes, because, you know, the person has a right to face his accuser, which, of course, we have to step up if we want to, you know, want to fight crime or stop crime. But, you know, it does make you wonder, like, if everybody's working in unison to stop crime. Sure. And I did provide mine, but I was just kind of thinking in my mind that this, you know, you really do need everybody to feel confident about it. But the way things are being done with the laws and stuff, you know, it does give you kind of pause. Like, do you want all these people that are back out on the street immediately to have all your information, even if they can be found, you know?
And you're so spot on. That they have the right to face their accuser. So when you're giving your information, there's always that thought, should I do this? What will happen? Are they going to prosecute? Are they going to be serious about this? And when you look at our elected officials, I don't have any confidence that they're going to move forward, or any confidence that they won't just like somehow accidentally give them my information and not move with it. And then there I am. Because there have been situations whereby the individuals that have committed the crimes have gone after the persons that have reported the crimes. And that shouldn't be the case. We should feel safe. I'm a victim of a crime, or I saw a crime and I am reporting it. And that's the reason why when you have these situations that are happening, they say, oh, please, if you saw this, if anyone saw anything, please let us know. You can do it in confidence. No one will know your name. But it's like, yeah, but how do I know that? I don't know who those people are that are working downtown, working with D.A. Bragg. And I keep mentioning his name because he was just recently elected. I didn't vote for him. I saw straight through him. But he was elected. Now, some would say, well, he's only been there for a couple of months or 3-5 months. Give him a chance. No, I'm not giving him a chance. Because from day one, he should have entered that office and said, this is what we're going to do to crack down on crime. But instead, it seems as though he went in and said, hey, what we're going to do is we're going to make certain that these guys that are committing the crime, we're going to give them every break in the world because they need compassion. What kind of compassion do they need? I should be able to go on to ride the subway without fear. And you hear Dr. Deb that the current mayor, Eric Adams, he's only been in office for about, 3-6 months, but no, he was sworn in January. So just 3 months. And he's trying to encourage everyone to take the subway. Now, have you noticed whenever he comes out and gives a press conference about take the subway, we hear of a story of someone being attacked on the subway? You can't make this stuff up. He goes out and says, take the subway. The subways are safe. And then within an hour later, there was an attack on the subway. Someone was brutally attacked. Someone was pushed. Have you noticed that, Dr. Devi?
I do. It reminds me of when Bill de Blasio, right before the horrible COVID spike in March, it reminds me of when Bill de Blasio was doing all those ads, take the subway.
Take the subway. Right. I'm like, you take the subway at your peril. And then it's like, go take the subway, go back to work. It's like, yeah, but in order to go back to work, we've got to take the subway. And I was reading the other day that Bank of America, it's located in Times Square. They were telling their employees that when you go out in the streets, when you leave the office, be careful. Don't wear anything flashy. Dress down. But this is a corporate company telling the workers to dress down for your safety. What? Dress down? And you want me to come to work? Are you serious? I mean, what kind of sense does that make?
No, it's dress terrible. Down.
Right. It's like, there's no confidence in telling me I'm coming to work. Then you're going to tell me, oh, by the way, dress down. So what am I supposed to do? Dress like I'm homeless? I mean, think about it. What do you mean by dress down for my safety? Because you don't know what's on the other side. And then in Seattle, Amazon, they're telling their workers, stay at home, work from home. Don't go downtown to our offices. It's to your detriment if you do go. So the criminals are taking over because they know there's no repercussion. I can do whatever I want to do. They're not going to do anything to me. It should not be that way. They should not have that much control. Now, when you're going to work, how do you feel when you're going to work, doctor?
Well, I work in the financial district, actually, where you live. And, it's a mixed bag because the financial district has set up all these reincarnations, earlier at certain times it looks like it's completely deserted. So I can't really quite tell what to make of that. Like it looks very different than it did a few years ago. Certain times I do get an eerie feeling because I tend to work late at times, seeing patients catching up on work. So I do feel like I'm not going to take the subways at these times. There's no way I'm taking any risks. Like I have to take an Uber. But then I read about those cases where passengers kill the Uber driver, or there's another one where an Uber driver attacked the passenger. So, it just seems like in this past week, there's so much crime. It's actually hard to keep track of all the different scenarios that have been going on. So I feel like my general feeling about crime is that you just have to watch out everywhere when you step out. I'm not trying to create panic, but I feel like unlike before, I just always have to keep my senses. Like I keep my AirPods in, but I have the volume off half the time because I feel like this is not the time for me to be listening to music. I just have to pay attention to everything that's going on, but keep them in so people don't just start talking to me for no reason.
Right. I've been known to do that also. Sometimes I'm not even listening to music. I just keep them on because I don't want people to. I just want to just like take my ride, quiet, calm. But if I have it on, you have to be cognizant because you want to be aware of your surroundings.
Yeah, and exactly.
It wasn't like that. I would walk with my headphones on, blasting them, jogging, going about my daily task. But now you can't do it. And as you said, you would think that you would be able to in the financial district. You would think that you would think that there's safety, that the police would be there. But
yes,
it's not the case because you're hopscotching over human excrement. You're hopscotching over homeless people. They'll just go out and just lay down on the sidewalk. My kid goes to the school not too far away. And we would walk to school. There was always like one or two homeless people just right out on the sidewalk. And you would have to walk over them or around them.
Yeah.
Is this the city we want? Go ahead, doctor.
No, the reason I started shooting that cell phone footage earlier is because now I've seen so many incidents, I guess, just working through the pandemic, I've seen so many incidents of violence, even running for office. People did come and attack me and physically assault me, but I don't know, I guess it was just brushed under the table that, because it was a campaign, these people were labeled as protesters or whatever, but.
Like you said, labeled as protesters, yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly. So, but then I noticed like certain things, like my sixth sense has gotten better for when something's about to happen. Like I've noticed if there's some kind of visual disturbance, and then a lot of sound that becomes distracting. Like there's so many distracting things caused by either one person or group of people at the exact same time that you should immediately become attuned to everything going on around you and try to get out of there, which is what this individual on the subway did. It wasn't just him. He started blaring this music, pacing all around the place, doing all kinds of things. There's a lot of stuff going on in terms of sound and just visually things going on. I just had a feeling something's going to happen. This guy's going to go crazy, like, well, not medically crazy, but just something's going to happen right at this moment. And it did within a few moments. So now I just have become much more attuned to that type of thing, I think.
Right. Now, speaking of COVID, and I think back almost a week ago, we were given directions that we could, definitely in the schools, could stop wearing the mask. There isn't a push anymore for people to be vaccinated, although, they're still recommending it. Dr. Fracci is nowhere to be seen now. He's hiding somewhere. But what are your thoughts on the lax, I want to say, in having to wear the mask? And I think as of this past Monday, people were able to go to restaurants and eat without having to show a vaccine card. So what are your thoughts around that?
Well, I think people should be able to go and move with freedom, to these places. To begin with, at this point, I think we've achieved, now it's like, I don't know if you're still blacklisted for using the word, but herd immunity, either through natural immunity or vaccine, vaccine-related immunity or both. People, between Omicron and all the other variants that have come before it. So I think people should be able to move around with freedom regardless. But even before that, I was against the mandates because I think people should have choices and be able to make decisions. I'm a physician who's in favor of informed consent. And one thing I always thought was, even when I was running, I was running for public advocate in New York City. I just felt that, running for office saying this, I thought, okay, I'm prepared for the entire medical community to come out against me. I will risk my career and my reputation to run for office here. Like, that's it. It's worth running. But then I was so shocked, we had donors from the CDC and it was my first time running, so I wasn't as familiar with campaign finance, but we got donors from the CDC. And then there's a group called Castle Connolly. It's basically, they are very prestigious in terms of naming the top doctors in the country. You can only get to that list by being voted on by doctors. And I used to be on that list, so I thought I would just drop off. But no, I was voted there again. I'm not trying to be conceited. It was just the shock of it to me that I was voted back on. So that means like the doctors, I did not get blacklisted. I actually got, either the same or more support as before. So I think that, people felt the same way that I did. I'm pretty sure they just were so afraid to come out and disagree with Fauci and, I don't know, the press and like, all of this, that they just didn't say it, but they felt it. So I don't think I'm alone in thinking that, or that, you know, that we are alone in thinking that.
So do you think it was an overkill, the vaccine requirement? Well, not the vaccine requirement, but definitely the mask. Having to wear the mask everywhere, do you think that was a bit of an overkill?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know what, like, I think in the beginning when people were trying different things, like, I don't think there was a problem in asking people to do certain things, because in the early stages when the numbers were going up and people were dying in New York, it makes sense to try to do something to lessen the damage. But, you know, things were getting, I think, out of control when those executive powers just stayed and they weren't. I think there's a certain point where people just have gotten power. This isn't just one person, but just like in general. I think people, once they have power, they like to hold on to it. And it trickles down, not just from one person, but kind of throughout the government bureaucracy. So then whether it's with masks or vaccines or a lot of things, just working in the medical community, I saw it in a lot of the bureaucratic sort of thinking. It was just sort of like a way to impose sort of fines and, you know, strengthen your power over people. So I think that was more so than medical reasons. That was sort of where this kind of transition from being, well, let's try some different things to see if we can lessen the damage that's being, you know, done, like to, you know, lower the number of deaths, rather than doing that. It wasn't like trial and error, let's see what we can do. It was more like, let's see what we can do to gain control and maintain our power.
We saw over the winter that it seemed like everyone was getting COVID, the Omicron virus. And it seems like since this war in Ukraine has started, the media has stopped talking about it and paying attention to COVID. Do you think it's going to be a yearly occurrence where we're going to see surges like we've seen this year just because of the weather and other factors?
Of COVID?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, so it may have different variants, but I think it's going to be something seasonal, perhaps like the flu. It may not be related to weather, but other things. Like if we look at other viruses just in general, so usually what happens is the virus, it's still around, like continuing to mutate. You know, there's always going to be mutations, but the idea of a mutation is that it's trying to make the virus better able to survive, right? It's trying to adapt. So if it's going to survive, in general, it's got to keep the host alive, because the second the host dies, the virus dies too. So over time, it's going to become weaker, but it's going to become more transmissible. So more people will get infected. So the idea would be that it would spread more easily, but be less dangerous over time. So I think, you know, the chances of us getting rid of it are like pretty much non-existent. It's just going to be with us, I think. This is my opinion, but I think it's going to be with us, you know, forever. But because pretty much most people probably have antibodies in one form or another, you know, that it's not going to be dangerous to us in the same way. That doesn't mean there's not exceptions, just that generally speaking, it's not going to be as dangerous. So I think it'll be around. It may have different surges. Maybe the press will talk about it at certain times more. But I don't think that generally people should feel as scared to go about their normal lives. But I thought we could have said that a lot earlier, too.
Yeah, I think a lot of people were hoping that would be the case. And what are your thoughts on children getting vaccinated at a young age? We're seeing some states say that kids even as young as 5 need to be vaccinated to be able to go to school. What are your thoughts on young children being forced to be being vaccinated?
Well, so the forced and need to, all of that I'm opposed to. I think these things, you know, parents should have information and then be able to make decisions. Our problem right now is that the information doesn't seem to be information that we can really have full and transparent access to. And that even has come out recently that the CDC has been withholding data that it had all along, which I suspected even previously, because the CDC collects such large amounts of data from so many hospitals and so many medical centers. So to begin with, that's there. All of this information about natural immunity from people who've gotten sick, I mean, where is all of that information? all of these studies that these pharmaceutical companies have been doing. Where is all the data? You know, there's so much information out there, but to begin with, it's not freely accessible. Then on top of that, you know, we have these companies that are making huge profit off this. People are very skeptical. So release the information, then you immediately will address people's hesitancy and loss of confidence, because then you can have, you know, the people who believe in what you're doing and the people who are skeptical of what you're doing look at it together. I mean, that's the whole idea of science. You know, for me, I've published a lot of research over my 25-year career as a scientist. And what they do usually when you try to publish a research article, they take your article and they send it to your competitors, you know, to your competitors to rip it apart. And only after your competitors say that your work is tolerable or acceptable or suitable for publication, can you get it published? That's what they do to make sure that it's sufficient. Here, you're not allowed to say anything against what's going on. I mean, that's the complete opposite of what's normally done in the publication process.
Doctor, I've got a question for you. Why is it, what do they, like when the Omicron variant came out and people were testing, and you were going to get tested, and they would just say, you tested positive. They didn't tell you if you tested positive for the Omicron strand or the first strand. Why didn't they tell us that? Do you know?
No, I don't know. I mean, the test may not have been sensitive, but they should, I mean, may not have differentiated, but they should have been able to differentiate by that time. Because there was the Delta strain that was competing with the Omicron strain at a certain point, and they thought that the strains might not infect the same person at the same time. So, you know, so the test makers probably could have differentiated the two if the government had asked them to make those types of tests available.
So there wasn't like a secrecy for them to keep it. And they did have the ability to let you know if you had the Delta, the first, the Delta, or the Omicron.
Well, as to secrecy, I'm not an insider, so I don't know if there was right. some kind of directive.
But, okay.
There are ways to differentiate the two. So it would just be a matter of whether the test maker was trying to do it or if they were trying to skip a few steps and not necessarily do it. So like, for example, it would be, if you're doing a home drug test or something, you know, you could have some basic type of thing that says positive for opiates, or you could have a fancier one that separates out, you know, what type of opiate or something if you're trying to figure out which one it is, something like that. So there are tests that could differentiate different things, but of course, it might be a little bit more expensive or a little bit more in depth to do it, but there's no reason that it wouldn't be able to.
Thank you so much, Dr. Devi, for your time. We really appreciate it. What's the best spot people can go to if they want to keep in touch with what you're doing?
Oh, so my regular website is drdevi.com. So it's drdev as in Victor, I.com. Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. We always appreciate your expertise. And thank you all for joining us tonight on After Dark with Rob and Andrew. Check us out and all the other shows over at AmericaOutLoud.com. You can also find America Out Loud on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Pandora, or wherever you download your podcast. Make sure you like and subscribe. We'll see you guys next time. And remember, stand for something or you will fall for nothing.